All right, everybody, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I'm back from Hawaii, had a really good trip, and then I actually landed on a red-eye flight in Vegas on a Wednesday morning about 8 a.m. We ran to the office, we did another podcast, filmed some other content, and then drove home, did a load of laundry, and then immediately drove to Salt Lake. I spent some time up at Crispy Boots, so Crispy headquarters. For those of you guys who have been asking, where's Crispy Boots? We will have those available in the gear shop pretty soon. So that was a good afternoon. I got a chance to spend some time with the guys up there. Just a good group of dudes. Met with John and Lars and Mark. John is a fellow pronghorn enthusiast. So it was fun to get a chance to sit and talk shop with him, talk pronghorn hunting. But those are good dudes. They make a good boot, and we will have those in the gear shop here in the next coming weeks. After that, ran up to a Total Archery Challenge, spent a weekend up there working the booth, got a chance to shoot some arrows with the guys from SIG, and then our friend Jess Lauder had a good shoot on Sunday morning. Even Brady broke out the bow. I think Brady has been talked into picking up a bow and arrow, and I think we're talking about maybe doing an elk hunt. I think it's high time that Brady shoots a bull elk with his bow. I don't think he's ever actually killed an elk with his bow, so this will be a good opportunity going into the future. But had a really good weekend up there, and then it's just been busy since I get back. I've been trying to get my ducks in a row to get ready for hunting season, which is what I'm going to dive into in this episode here in a minute. Kind of run through. I'm going to title this episode "You're Not Ready for Hunting Season," and the reason I know that you're not ready is because I'm not ready. And maybe that's a broad stroke of a statement. Maybe you guys are ready. I hope that you are. But if you're anything like me, life gets really hectic, it gets busy, and then hunting season creeps up on us, and I don't feel ready. So I've been thinking about it quite a bit. I've got a antelope hunt that starts this coming Friday, so less than a week, and I'm feeling massively unprepared, and it's been on my mind a lot lately. Anytime I get some wind chill time to and from Vegas, these are the kinds of things I'm thinking about. I'm shooting my bow in the morning. I'm thinking about these kinds of things. I probably should focus a little bit on becoming and being a better, more accurate archer, but it feels like inevitably all these thoughts of all the things that I need to do keep creeping into my head. So I wanted to do a podcast today. I wanted to, like I said, title it "You're Not Ready." And I say that in jest, but I was been thinking about the things that I'm not ready with. And so I wanted to kind of visit those. I think at the end of it, I'll give you a real world assessment of where I'm at, the things that I'm lacking on. I also wanted to run through a bunch of things that I think might be able to help some of you guys get more prepared for hunting season that comes up. So with that, I'm going to hit you with the promo code before I dive into the episode. So promo code is Game Trail. That's GAMETRAIL. You can use that promo code if you want to buy anything in the Go Hunt Gear Shop. I think most brands that we carry will give you 10% off. If you are a member right now, we have a special promo going on. And again, you can use my promo code. It's a refer a friend program. So if you refer a friend, you're going to get 75 points back in the Go Hunt Gear Shop, as well as your friend will get 75 points back. You can refer up to 3 friends and continue to get 75 points on each one of your new friends that signs up as a new Go Hunt Insider. When you sign up 4 people, so 4 new people, if you refer them, they sign up as insiders, we're actually going to give you 1,000 points total. So that's $1,000 to the Go Hunt Gear Shop that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. There's a lot of things I could buy with $1,000. So pretty killer promo. If you got some buddies that have been dragging their feet, they've been looking at Insider, maybe wanting to get into hunting a little bit more, I think this is a great time to refer them. So like I said, you can use that promo code Game Trail. Also, shout out to Matthew's Archery. Matthew is a sponsor of the podcast. Been talking some shop with Matthew's, and I'm super excited. So that's all I have to say about it right now, but they make a great bow. I spent probably 4 or 5 hours yesterday helping some friends from St. George get their bows tuned up. Those guys were both shooting new Matthews Lift X bows. Got them tuned up, ready to rip, shooting bullet holes before they left. And I think they're going to be real happy with the results. And, you know, they love their Matthews bows. So shout out to Matthews as a sponsor. With that, let's dive into the episode. So, first lie I think people tell themselves, myself included at times, that the broadhead, your broadhead selection, your broadhead tuning, you're not ready. And I know that because I'm not entirely ready, like I said. So how to approach broadheads and broadhead tuning. You know, my hope is every year that I've got my bow absolutely dialed, tuned, pin sighted in, sight tape built. And then ideally I would like to shoot broadheads with every arrow, and I would like to confirm those out to my maximum effective range. I know a lot of people, unfortunately, that will put one broadhead on one arrow and they will go to 20 yards and they'll shoot it. They might back up to 30 yards, maybe even 40 yards, just to check to see if their impact point is the same as their field point, and they kind of call it good. I don't think that's good enough. I know it's not certainly good enough for what I'm hoping for. So that's my first tip, and definitely on my agenda this week. I may end up having to take some hours off work, actually. But I need to ensure that each one of my arrows is shooting perfectly with a broadhead out to my effective range. So if my effective range, I'll talk a little bit more about it later in the podcast, but if my effective range is, you know, 60, 70 yards, I want to make sure that I can hit, you know, a 6-inch circle with, you know, 9 out of 10 arrows every group that I shoot. And I need to ensure that every single broadhead and on every arrow is flying accordingly. The reason I think that anything less than that is, you know, not doing due diligence is because, I've done it and I've missed animals, and nothing stings like missing an animal, or even worse, actually hitting an animal and not being able to find it. You know, if you think about hunting, and if you've hunted a little bit, you know that the opportunities to get within range and actually get a shot at an animal are rare. I would say in 10 days, archery mule deer hunting, if you've got a specific buck targeted, you may only get one shot at him. They're a super smart animal. Same with elk. If you got 10 days, you're backpacking, you might get 2 or 3 opportunities where they're in range. Really, a lot of the times you're boiling it down to maybe one shot. As I'm speaking, I can think of a number of hunts that I've done where it boiled down to one opportunity and I either made it or I didn't. And you always wonder, if you haven't shot your arrow and your broadhead combo, you don't really know, and especially across your effective range. You know, I remember a bull I missed in Arizona. I think I missed him because of an angle compensation error on my part. I think I shot over his back because I was using a Leica range finder, and you generally have to wait for that, calculated range. Again, that's something I should know, something that I should have practiced so intently that it's ingrained in my mind to the point where I would never forget it. But, you know, I think I missed him because of that compensation. But, if you haven't shot your arrow and your broadhead combo out to 50, 60, 70, 80 yards, you never really know. You don't know if it was the arrow. You don't know if it was you. And I don't like to leave things to chance. I like to take as many of those pieces off the table as I possibly can and really narrow it down so that when I get those opportunities, I'm as confident as I can possibly be. Go along with that. I think your sight tape or your pins may not be as accurate as they should be. The reason I say that is because I don't think, myself included, I don't know that I spend enough time actually getting my individual pins sighted in like I need to. So what I want to do this week, I actually just put a 5-pin housing on my sight. I've been shooting with a vertical pin, single pin. So I shot that at like Total Archery Challenge, which is really nice. It's great to be able to dial. And if you're shooting 3D, I've been pretty vocal about using a 5-pin sight for hunting situations because I think those situations change so quickly. So I want to have 5 set pins, and I'm way, way late in the game for getting that thing dialed to where I actually need it to be. So my plan is this week, like I said, is to sight those individual pins in super precisely. The way that I do that, I like to take a piece of tape. I like to put it on a target horizontally, and I like to shoot in my pins vertical. If you can imagine how that works on a horizontal line of tape, I do that because I don't have to necessarily worry about my left and right misses. The only thing I'm really focused on is my vertical, and I'm going to go through each individual pin 20 through 60 and sight each individual pin in, and then I'm going to spend some time on my sight tape. When I talk about sight tapes, it's interesting because every year when I go to a Total Archery Challenge, you know, I will have sighted my bow in here in Cedar City where I live, which is like 5,700 feet. And then I might end up shooting a course up there where the elevation might be 10,500 or 11,000 foot plus. always seems like I get some variation. So it always seems like my site runs hot. And I think it's just because of the altitude, the air is a bit thinner up there. And, you know, it's pretty common. I'll talk to people. They'll say, yeah, I'm like 1 or 2 yards off. You know, ideally you would be aware of that. So you'd actually get a chance to, you know, shoot your bow before your hunt. If that's like you roll into a trailhead up there at elevation where you plan to hunt and just do a double check of your pins and your sight, you know, you can make slight adjustments there. But it's cool now that we have programs like Precision Cut Archery where we can input all of our arrow build, you know, input our speed, you know, at a couple different distances, it'll generate a sight tape for you. You're going to input your elevation when you do that. And you can actually play around with your elevation within that program, which is really handy because I can see the difference in two different sight tapes between, you know, 5,700 foot and maybe 11,000 foot. And I can see where those are lacking and the differences. And I think that's important to know. I'm not saying that you have to make changes. Ideally, I think it's probably a good idea and then to verify it, but, just to be aware of it is a major, you know, bonus. If you know that you're shooting 70 yards at 11,000 foot and your tape tends to run a little bit hot, that's good information to know because that's a decision that you can make in the moment if you have to, but to be aware of is super important. And like I said, even if you can generate a new sight tape and verify it when you get up into elevation, I think that's really handy. What else do I have in this note section? I'm going to issue a challenge. So along with myself, I'm going to do these as well. My challenge for you guys this week is to paper tune every single arrow. So paper tune, knock tune. So if your bow is tuned and you can get one of your arrows to fly, you know, perfect bullet hole through paper, you should in theory be able to get all of your arrows to bullet hole through paper. And now it might take some knock tuning, which means you're going to spend that knock in the arrow, shoot it through paper until you get a perfect bullet hole. So I like to paper tune every single arrow, at least every single arrow that I plan on hunting with. I put a broadhead on it and I go out into the field. I want to make sure that that arrow is coming out of the bow the same way as every other arrow. So I want to make sure that I paper tune. So I guess my challenge for you this week would be to paper tune every arrow that you plan on hunting with. Along with that, double check your pins. You know, use that horizontal method of putting a tape on a target. Check your pins, check them again and again and again, you know, shoot for groups and ensure that your pins are where they need to be. Work with your sight tape. I think that's a good thing to do. And then above and beyond everything, put broadheads on your arrows that you plan to hunt with and shoot each one of those arrows with a broadhead out to distance. Now I know broadheads are expensive. I just bought some when I was up at TAC there from Sever. That's what I'm planning on hunting with is those Sever 1.5 hybrids. You can take one of those heads and put it in a practice mode, and you can rotate that same broadhead to each individual arrow, and you can shoot each individual arrow with that one broadhead out to your effective range just to double check it. Nothing gives you confidence like making sure that your arrows with a broadhead are flying great. The one thing about shooting broadheads that's interesting is, and I don't know if you guys are different than me, but when I put a broadhead on the end of my arrow versus the field tip, which I've been practicing with all summer, it feels different. It like I have this heightened sense of anxiety, and that's because I don't shoot broadheads enough. I don't know if you guys are that way, but I definitely feel it. When I look down the end of my arrow and I see the broadhead sitting there, it feels different. So get used to it. You know, shoot a lot of broadheads this week if you can. So that's my challenge to you. Knock tune every single arrow through paper, make sure it's bullet holing, work with your pins, make sure that those are dead nuts, and then shoot your arrows with a broadhead. Make sure that they're shooting out to your effective range. Going along with that, excuse me. I have a note here and my note says, you're not as accurate as you think, Trail. And I would probably say that to most of you. I know some people that are super accurate and they probably are as accurate as they think they are, but I don't know many of them. I would say most people are probably not as accurate as they think they are, myself included. I shot up at the local range this morning with a friend of mine that lives here in Cedar, kind of a new friend. He'd asked if I'd run up and shoot some arrows with him, and, you know, I'd go into those situations kind of thinking, you know, I'm supposed to be the guy that knows how to shoot a bow. I shoot every day. You know, I've got all of my own equipment and I tune, and, you know, there's a little bit of an expectation there when I go into those situations, like, hey, I'm supposed to shoot good. I didn't shoot good this morning. I definitely did not shoot up to what I thought I'm capable of, you know, even based on the other opportunities that I've taken to shoot, you know, the rest of the week. So my note here, you're not as accurate as you think you are. You know, shooting groups in your backyard, at your local range, it's not the same as shooting, you know, 52 yards with a 20 degree angle after you've hiked 5 miles and you have a pack on your back. It's different. It's completely different. Like I said, even when you put a broadhead on your arrow, it feels a little bit different. So, this week, my plan after I get the other things done is to do some real world shooting practice. You know, I've taken and I've practiced these kinds of shots throughout the summer and necessarily haven't taken them with a pack on, you know, haven't taken them with some strain in my body, you know, after a hard workout. That stuff's all important. I want to know how my body feels. I want to know how I react. So those are some things that I'm going to try to do this week. I'm going to do real world shooting drills this week as often as I can. So I'm going to shoot some incline, both uphill and downhill. Before I even go out, I'm going to check my sight to verify that my first, second, and my third axis is in. And then when I'm out there and I'm shooting incline, whether that's uphill or downhill, I want to double check my third axis. I want to make sure that the arrow is hitting behind the pin. And I want to pay close attention to my bubble level as I'm shooting those inclines. It's really rare, in my opinion, that you get a shot in the field where you're not shooting uphill, downhill, or side hill. It's just the nature of Western big game hunting. And those shots can be really difficult. They're definitely way more difficult than just shooting at 30 yards in your backyard or just up at your local range. Another practice I'm going to implement this week, and I think it's a good idea for you guys that are listening, is this one shot cold arrow drill. So I try to make, and this week I'm definitely going to make, that first arrow out of my bow, I'm going to approach it with real intent. And I say that because that's the shot that matters, right? It's that first shot out of bed in the morning. You know, you're onto a bold, you call him in, and you know, you probably haven't shot your bow for a few days. I always try to carry a judo tip if I can when I'm in the field and maybe get a couple arrows in here and there, or I may just put an arrow on my bow and draw the bow and anchor and just try to hold steady, do some aiming drills when I'm out there. But that cold arrow, I think, is a good drill. So first arrow out of my bow every day this week, I'm going to be real, real intentional with it, and I'm going to focus. I'm going to try to make that shot. So that one arrow, cold shot arrow drill, I think, is good for you guys to work on this week. Another thing, I think, is shooting with your pack on, shooting after you've worked out. So, you know, when you go this week, do everything you can with intent to mimic and replicate a real world shot situation, because myself included, I'm definitely not as good as I think I am. And this goes along with another thing I'm going to talk about here at the bottom about, you know, being realistic in your expectations of yourself, having some self-control, you know, when you take a shot. Next on my list, I have you tested your gear? So the first one on the list I have is boots. How many miles have you put on your boots in the type of terrain that you're going to be hunting? Realistically, I know that I have two new pairs of boots sitting here in my equipment room that I tried on that I don't have a mile on. You know, I talked to a buddy yesterday, actually one of the individuals that was here at the house when I was working on their bow. You know, he told me he'd gone on an elk hunt in Colorado, and I don't know if it was a new pair of boots, if it was a pair of boots that he'd had, and then, you know, unfortunately found out that they're not working for his feet, but essentially it ate his foot up so bad that he ended up hunting the rest of his hunt in Hey Dudes because it absolutely just torched his feet in the boots that he had. That's a really crappy lesson to learn when you're in the middle of your elk hunt. You know, if you're out hunting elk in your Hey Dudes, man, that's a bummer, especially if you get one down, you got to pack it out. Sore feet will kill you. Blisters will kill you. Absolutely ruin a hunt without doubt. And I've had them. I've had sore feet. I've had blisters. You know, I found out in the middle of a hunt in a pack out that my feet were super sore and the insoles that I had in my boots were completely shot. I've showed up to a trailhead with a pair of boots that I had broken in and worn for an entire year before that had done great, that when I put them on this year, for whatever reason, maybe they'd stayed in my car in the hot sun when I was in Vegas, they didn't fit the same. They didn't feel the same. And it's eating up my pinky toe. All those things are just mistakes that shouldn't be made. So boots, socks, put them on, break them in, do as many miles as you can in realistic terrain. And do not go out into the field with boots that you are not totally confident are going to work for you. This is a really common mistake, like way more common than you might think. If you guys are super prepared out there, good on you. But this is a mistake that I see all the time. I would say almost every hunter that I know has a story like this, where they put on a new pair of boots or they put on a pair of boots that they've had and they found out they just didn't work for them anymore. And it absolutely just smoked their feet. So don't do that. Insoles is another great way to update and kind of rejuvenate the life of your boot. In the middle of the hunt, in the middle of a pack out, is a bad time to find that your insoles are completely compacted and making your feet sore. So now's a great time to evaluate your boots. You know, treat them, put some waterproofing on them, get that leather, you know, kind of broken in and supple. Whatever it is you got to do to take care of your feet. Same thing with socks. Make sure that you test your socks. Make sure that you've got enough socks for your hunts. So really address your feet. And I think it's right near the tip top of my list as far as things I need to work on. Next one I have is sleep system. So when is the last time that you guys actually inflated your sleeping pad and left it inflated, or even better yet, slept on it to ensure that you don't have any leaks in it? When's the last time you guys pulled out a tarp or a tent and double checked to make sure that there were no rips or tears in it, or that all the in loops or the guy outlines existed and were in good working order? I am really guilty of taking stakes from one tent and then using them on another tent. And, you know, I don't know how many times I've grabbed a tent, definitely more than once, where I've grabbed a tent and I got out into the field and I didn't have the number of stakes that I needed to actually pitch that thing properly. So, you know, I migrate my stakes from one tent to the next. So I would tell you, don't ever just grab a tent, and just take it out into the woods and expect everything to be proper. It's always good to pull that thing out, double check it, make sure everything is right and tight. And check to make sure that you've got the number of stakes that you need. I would really discourage you from just grabbing a tent and going. It's always good to give it a good once over before you head out into the hills. You know, if you think about your sleep system, your sleeping bag, your pad, your tent, I mean, that could be the difference of life and death depending on the weather that you might get. So I take that pretty serious. I want to make sure that those three are definitely lined up and good to go. Next note I have is optics. My optics right now are filthy. I know for a fact that they are. So when is the last time you guys actually cleaned the glass in your optics? I would recommend before your season kicks off, take some time and really clean that glass. You're going to find more animals. You'll have a better experience. So clean the glass. Along with that, if you're using image stabilizing binos like the SIG Kilo, or not the Kilo rangefinder, or the Zulu 6s, when's the last time you changed the battery in those things? You know, the Zulus are an incredible tool when they have the image stabilization turned on. If you turn that off, they're much less effective. It's actually, in my opinion, a fairly rough experience if you don't have the ability to use that image stabilizing technology that's built within those things. So, you know, when's the last time you changed the battery in them? Same thing goes for your rangefinder. When I was up at TAC, I know a number of guys that got up in there that found out that their rangefinder battery was dead. And they were borrowing rangefinders or, you know, guessing yardages, maybe losing some arrows. So, now's a great time to check the battery life in your rangefinder, check to make sure that your rangefinder is working. If you've got archery mode, you know, like in your SIG rangefinders, or if you've got like a Leupold Full Draw 5, it's a great time to make sure that all the inputs into that that help you with that angle compensation when you need it most are good to go. So double check that. Put a new battery in it. I think every year before hunting season really kicks off, I just go ahead and grab a brand new battery and I put it in, and it just gives me that warm and fuzzy feeling that when I actually need a full range that I've got a good battery and it's good to go. Along with that, Western hunting, you know, tripod is everything. I do a lot of glassing from a tripod with a set of binos, especially if I'm hunting mule deer or coos deer or antelope. I'm always putting my spotting scope up there to kind of judge and check an animal out. you know, I'm thinking of a story right now where I took a tripod out and discovered that I was missing the bottom leg section. It had apparently fallen out during a hunt, and I was left with, you know, some limited height in that tripod that I could get out of it. So I just had to live with it. But it's always good to do a once over on your tripod and your tripod head. It's not uncommon for tripod heads to kind of come unscrewed, so it's always good to make sure that those are tightened down. It's good to make sure that your tripod adapters for your binos are ready to go. You know, if you've got one that actually goes on your bino, just double check to make sure that it works. Make sure it clamps in. Hopefully you've got a chance to get out and do some summer scouting to verify that, but it's always good to give your tripod a once over just to make sure everything's good to go, because I really do think that is, it's one of the biggest difference makers is your ability to glass up and find game. You can't kill what you can't find, and you got to make sure that your optics and your tripod head are in great working order, or it's going to make that job even that much harder. It's already hard. Moving along to some other things. So your pack, you know, your pack, if you think about your pack, it's kind of low maintenance, right? You just use it, you bring it home, set it down and let it go. If you're like me anyway, I did recently give mine a bath, took a power washer to it and really cleaned it up good. But it's good to give your pack a once over, including the buckles. Make sure the buckles are in good working order. I know recently I checked one of my packs. I think I was going to Hawaii and found that I was missing a female portion of one of the buckles. I think I remember now that I'd robbed it to put on another pack. I don't know why I was missing that one, but I was. But next time I use that same pack, you know, the other one, I'm going to be missing that buckle. So it's always good to do a once over on your buckles and make sure that everything works. It's not uncommon to have people slam buckles in a door and break a buckle. So I do like to give those a good once over. I do like to clean it. The other thing I like to do is a pack fit. You know, hopefully you guys have got out and do some summer scouting and you've been using your pack, but if you haven't for a while, I haven't done any summer scouting because I don't have a tag in my home state and it's been so busy. You know, elk hunting, I don't necessarily put a ton of weight into actual boots on the ground scouting. It is nice if you can do it, but you know, those animals move so much that I typically haven't put a ton of weight in that. I've put a lot more time and effort into scouting for muleys or pronghorn, but, I haven't done any summer scouting. So it's been a hot minute since I've actually had my full kitted out pack on my back. Along with that, I think it's a good time to do a pack fitting, you know, double check to make sure that your harness is working for the length of your torso, make sure that your hip belt fits, you know, that you've got that thing set up the way that you need it. You got the load lifters in the right position. Some of us, myself included, maybe I've put on a few pounds. I just need to make sure that my hip belt fits. Maybe you've lost some weight. That would be great for folks, but you know, double check to make sure that you've got the room in your hip belt so that when you pull those buckles all the way in that you're not bumping up against them and you run out of room, you know, should you get a really heavy load on your back, you know, that you don't have the room to actually cinch that thing around your hips. So I think giving your pack a good once over is a really good idea just to make sure that thing is functional. Make sure there's no rips and tears. I've had packs fail on me on hunts. I've had the shoulder straps break, tear. It's not fun. It's not a good thing to try to fix your shoulder straps on a pack when you're out in the field, when you've got a mule deer on your back. So, you know, double check, make sure that all those seams are good and reinforced and healthy and good to go. Along with that, load shelf, make sure that you know how to use your load shelf, AKA your meat shelf on your pack. If I had a dime for every time I hunted with somebody that asked, how do I use this load shelf, when we were, you know, literally pulling quarters off either a mule deer or an elk, you know, I could probably buy my, you know, my next Diet Pepsi at the local Maverick. It's happened a number of times. It's super common for people not to know how to use their load shelf. They've never used it. You know, maybe you got a brand new pack from Kufaru or Stone Glacier or Mystery Ranch, and you've never actually explored how to use the load shelf. I would suggest breaking your pack down. Understand how the load shelf works. It's a really daunting task to pack a big game animal out of the wilderness. And the last thing that you want to be faced with is knowing that your load shelf works. You know, how does it carry with something on the load shelf? You don't want to have to sacrifice putting meat inside the mainframe of your pack, and then having to leave some of your equipment if you could have got everything in your pack by utilizing the load shelf. So spend some time exploring your backpack and knowing how to use your load shelf. That was definitely a tip that I think you guys should explore. And there's a lot of videos online to help you understand how that works. So I would definitely explore it. Moving into gear. Does your headlamp work? Is it charged? Do your battery packs work? Those battery packs, if you've been using for a number of years, they may not work the same as they used to. They kind of tend to deteriorate over time. How many charges are you getting out of your battery packs for your phone or for your inReach? That's a really important factor that you need to know, because it can help you know how many you actually need to take on a hunt, depending on how many days you're going to be there. Is your inReach activated? Have you tested it? Does it send and receive messages? That could be really, really important for us. You want to make sure of that. Moving over to your stove and your water filtration, you know, does your stove work? Do you have a new bottle of fuel? Is it enough fuel for the hunt that you're going on? You know, if you're like me, you've probably migrated the remnants of your fire starting kit from one year to the next. I can think that I've probably got a couple of lighters that I've migrated year over year over year over year. Do those lighters work? I need to pull them out and test them, because who knows how old they are. They may be 2 or 3 years old at this point. Waterproof matches, I tend to carry those. You know, do they work? You know, I might strike one. I might actually just pick up a new bottle of them and kind of backfill my fire starter kit. Do you have fire starter materials, like whether it's Vaseline soaked cotton or a cotton ball soaked in Vaseline, or, you know, pyro putty, whatever it might be? Do you have enough of it for your needs in a life threatening situation, should you need it? You know, moving over to water, for those of you that are using water pumps or water filters, it's really common that those things get gunked up and can, you know, they don't work. I know a lot of folks that'll, you know, come home from a hunt and, you know, they don't clean them. So are those things functioning and do they work? If you're going to use water treatment drops, like I do, like the Aquamura drops or even the Tabs, you know, what's the age life? What's the lifespan of those things? I don't actually even know. I need to double check and look. I can think that I've got probably 8 or 10 of those Tabs that I've been carrying around in my pack for years and years. I don't even know if there's a shelf life on those things. I need to look into it as I say that. But water drops, I use those every year. Do I have enough of them? And, you know, do I have enough of them for the amount of water I'm going to be drinking for the length of days that I'm actually going to be out in the field? Those are all things I need to check. Kill kit. Did I sharpen my knives? So when I come home from a hunt, I can't ever remember pulling out my knives after I finish processing the animal and actually putting an edge back on them. Do I have enough Havilon blades or the replaceable blades, if that's the knife that I use to go out onto my hunt? It seems like those things, they get really hard to find prior to hunting season kicked off. So I would say buy early and buy often, because you definitely need some of those replaceable blades for your knives. And they're not easy to find as the hunts get closer in the fall. You know, if you put an edge on your fixed blade knives, I think now's a great time to sit down and put a really nice edge on your knives before you head out and add that to your kill kit. Because like I said, I very rarely do that when I get home from a hunt. It just feels like I'm exhausted and I'm processing meat, and I kind of, you know, I just skip it. You know, the rest of your kill kit, run through it. You know, make sure that you've got the game bags that you need. Make sure that you're not carrying around items that you're not using. I know for a fact I don't use rubber gloves. I just don't. I know that some people love them. I don't. So there's really no need in me, you know, carrying them around. Parachute cord, sometimes you'll use it to hang meat. You'll cut it off in chunks. You want to check that and make sure that it's functional and working and that you have the lengths that you need to actually get your meat up off the ground. So I think running through your kill kit's a great thing to do. You know, weigh it, trim the fluff, make sure that you're not packing around things that you don't need or use. Next note I have is your first aid kit an afterthought? And as I say that, I say, yes, mine is, or has been. And I need to address it. It's a huge mistake, in my opinion, to just toss in a random first aid kit from, you know, your local Ace Hardware, your Walmart, without knowing what's in it. Bleeding, blisters, you know, busted joints. You're going to end your hunt. It could be even worse. So I would suggest running through your first aid kit and building a tailored kit to you. So I'm talking leukotape, gauze, clotting powder, you know, ibuprofen, nighttime Tylenol, blister care, maybe even some bigger, badder painkillers in a really bad situation if you needed them. You know, they might come in handy. Things like super glue, suture kit, all those things, you just really need to run through it. And along with that, I think now is a great time of year to brush up on just a basic first aid course. You can find those on YouTube. If you got a hunting buddy, it's a great time for you and your buddy to go through the same course, because there's a lot of cases where if something happens to you, it's probably going to be your buddy that's going to end up taking care of you. If you're unconscious, you can't give him direction. You know, you definitely want a hunting partner that knows what he's doing in regards to medical care and has some first aid knowledge. So I think now's a great time to brush up on a first aid course. And then this one's a big one. I recently read a comment. So I have not carried a tourniquet over the years. I'm going to carry a tourniquet this year, and it's based on a comment that I got on YouTube. I made the comment in a gear list that I haven't had a tourniquet in the past. And this guy said, you absolutely have to have a tourniquet. You need a tourniquet. And I think the quote that he used was something to the effect, and I might butcher this, but it was basically, if you are working with something that will poke a hole in you, you have to have the means of plugging that hole or stopping the bleeding. So this became really real for me recently, actually. So I was in Hawaii, I was hunting axis deer, and, you know, over the years I've cut myself. I don't know many people that have hunted quite a bit that haven't, you know, whether that was like tip of a finger or something like that. But, I killed an axis buck and I was cleaning this buck, and it's not often that I cut myself. You know, every once in a while I'll get like a little tiny one in a fingertip or something like that. But I've always been the guy that, like, oh, it's not going to happen to me. You know, I'm super careful. I'm like the most careful. And I'm working on this buck, and man, I just slipped. I don't even know how I did it, but I cut my wrist, and I cut it pretty shallow. It wasn't a bad cut, and it wasn't major, you know, arteries or anything like that, but it wasn't far off. And it happened really, really fast. And I sat back and I looked at it, and it didn't hurt. It wasn't bleeding that much. But I thought, you know, that's legitimately less than a half an inch from being a potential life ender, a major issue. And that was like a real moment for me where I'm like, you know what? I'm not prepared for a major bleeding situation where I'm losing a lot of blood. Really changed my perspective. So I will be adding a tourniquet. And then along with that, I will be doing some training on how to use a tourniquet. And I would advise that. I think it's a great idea. The reason I say that is because if you're like me, you always think it'll never happen to me. Like, that'll never happen to me. I'm super careful. I'm the captain. I'm the captain of the "it will never happen to me" team. Like, I think it's arrogant and it's stupid of me. But that's the way I've been. And every year I read stories, I see posts on people that have medical emergencies in the backcountry. And, you know, I might pass judgment on it sometimes and say, I wouldn't have done that. Reality is, stuff can happen, and it can happen so fast. And, you know, if you go through your entire life and it is never you, that's awesome. But in a blink of an eye, it could be. And it could be, you know, a major problem. It could be the difference between life and death. So, you know, I'm going to quit being arrogant. I'm going to quit being stupid and quit thinking, it won't be me. And I'm going to make some adjustments to my first aid kit, and I'm definitely going to add a tourniquet. So now's a great time to do it and learn how to use it. Jumping down, how's your vehicle running? I know that mine needs an oil change right now. I put new tires on it not too long ago, so I think my tires are good to go. So I need to do an oil change, and I got to get it done this week, because the last thing I want to do is drive all the way into the middle of nowhere, Nevada, and be thinking like, man, when was the last time I changed my oil? That's not good for my vehicle. And even if it doesn't really give me any issues, it just gives me peace of mind to know that I'm taking care of my property and I'm maintaining it, right? That it's going to function like I need it to. So how are your tires? How's the oil? Does it need an oil change? How's the battery life in your vehicle? What if you get a flat or you come back to your truck out in the middle of nowhere and you've got a dead battery? What's the plan? What's the plan to get it started? You know, I never used to put a lot of time and effort into thinking about that. I carried jumper cables and I thought, I guess at a minimum I could hike out and maybe find somebody that could get in there and, you know, jumpstart my vehicle. That kind of changed with this Uncharted supply. I think it's called the Zeus, and it's got an air compressor and a battery jumper in that. And it's a tiny little piece of equipment. I'm not entirely sure what it even cost, but I would say it's worth every penny. I've inflated flat tires. I've jumped vehicles. It's come in so handy. So I would say if you don't have a plan, because there's a lot of times you'll end up way out in the middle of nowhere and you don't want to inconvenience, you know, another hunter. You don't want to ruin your hunt. So have a plan, you know, to make sure that your vehicle's taken care of. Make sure the battery's charged. It's got good life to it. Make sure that you got a plan should your tire go flat or your battery die when you're out there. Just make sure that you can take care of it. And you want to be self-sufficient. Next one, hunters, myself, hunter. I underestimate the mountain. And what am I doing to physically prepare? So I've always said, be in the best shape that you can be in, even if you've done absolutely nothing this entire summer, which I would say this summer is probably one of the least prepared I've ever been in terms of my physical prep. I don't know if it's old age, lack of motivation. I don't know what it is exactly, but I am definitely not as physically prepared as I could be or should be. And I'm not on par with where I have been in previous years. In saying that, I could just say, you know what, that's just the way it's going to be. I'm going to have my mental toughness, like, pick up the slack, but I'm going to get better. I'm going to start. There's no time to start like now. I'm not going to be dumb about it and, you know, do way more than I think I can. I'm going to go slow. You know, I think rucking is a phenomenal exercise to get you in shape for hunting. I don't think anything replicates a hunt or gets you in better shape than rucking. So, you know, I'm rucking. Same with my diet. My diet has not been good this summer. I've been on the road a lot. You know, work's been really busy. Family's been really busy. And it feels like anytime that's the case, you know, if there's a bad choice to be made, I make a bad choice. But, you know, I'm about a week in right now. I've been making good diet decisions and I'm cleaning up my diet and I'm going to maintain that. Even if hunting season is just right here, knocking on the door, there's no time to start like right now. And that's what I'm starting. That's what I'm going to do. So I think now's a great time to lose some pounds. And I don't care if you're just starting right now, you lose 1 pound before hunting season. That's 1 pound that you don't have to carry around up the mountain. You know, ideally, you know, mid-September for most people elk hunting, you're still a month and a bit out. You've got a time where you could probably lose 10 pounds, to be honest. And 10 pounds is a big deal. If you can pack less weight around the hills, man, you'll feel so much better. So if it's late for you, late in the game, start now. Just do it. I'm going to do it. I've been tracking my calories. You know, I've been making sure I get workouts in and, you know, I don't care if it's a little bit late in the game, there's still time to do it and make some headway. So just get after it. The other note I would have on this, which is kind of a funny little note I included at the end. How important is that, you know, intramural or city league softball game or the weekly game of pickup basketball that you play with your buddies? And I say that because right now I'm into my 40s. I'm not as agile as I might have used to be. I'm a little bit more injury prone. Man, I really am careful when it gets this time of year about doing anything that might yield myself a major injury, like softball, like basketball. I just really try to rein it in a little bit and focus and train on the things that I think are going to make me better at hunting. And I'm not saying those are bad things. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do those because obviously that's great exercise. And it's a good time out with your buddies. I think it's good for you. I just would say, be a little bit careful. What are your objectives? My objective is to be able to hunt. I love it. I look forward to it every single year. So I'm just really particular this time of year with any extracurricular activities that I might pursue because I just want to be healthy. And I want to be healthy going into hunting season. There's nothing like being sick. It's the worst. So, you know, daily vitamins, Cleaning up my diet, making sure I get good sleep. I want to make sure that I just feel as good as I possibly can. And I don't want to go into hunting season being sick. So I'm trying to really take care of my health. And the older I get, the more valuable my health has become. The next note that I have: mental reps win hunts. So what I mean by that, you know, I've practiced shooting all year. But have I really practiced decision making in regards to, you know, hunting and in regards to my shooting? Have I mentally set boundaries? I think the last thing that you want to be presented with in a hunting situation, especially bow hunting, is, can I make this shot? Should I even take this shot? I'm guilty of most people, as are most people, I would think, of lacking maybe a little bit of self-control in the moment, maybe not setting boundaries, you know, that I know without doubt that I'm going to live with, you know, thinking I can maybe make this shot. I might be able to make this shot, might be able to make this shot, or maybe I'm going to make this shot is not a solid strategy for killing animals, ethically. And I've been guilty of it. I think probably a lot of people have. I think you've probably been presented with a hunting situation where you've thought, maybe I make this shot. Maybe this is the time that I make that shot. It's not a strategy for killing animals. And I know that. So I'm really trying to work on that. I think you should know your boundaries. You should set them and you should live by them. So an example of that is, what is my actual real world effective range? And I don't necessarily mean just at my local range when I'm wearing flip-flops and I'm hanging out with my dog shooting arrows. I mean, what is my effective range when I've hiked 5 miles and I have a pack on my back? That's something I want to know. I want to know the distance where I can effectively put 9 of 10 arrows in a 6-inch circle. When I get too far beyond that, I need to mentally prepare myself for setting those boundaries, saying, if this shot presents itself, I have done the work. I know that I can't make it, or I can make it. You know, what am I going to do when faced with this situation? I'm a real proponent of trying to visualize things and trying to set boundaries and exercising some self-control. I want to be better at that. And it's something I think I've been thinking about a lot. So, you know, a situation like, what am I going to do if a bull elk comes in and he's standing there frontal screaming at 40 yards? What am I going to do? I want to know what I'm going to do in that situation. And I'm not saying you can't make that shot. I think it's very individual. I definitely know people that can make that shot every single time. You know, that's a shot that they could make, and their answer should be, I'm going to execute the shot and kill the bull. But I want to know. I want to know myself, like, what is my effective range and what am I comfortable with? You know, whatever the situation might be, I think it's good to think those through and just, you know, fill in the blank. What am I going to do? I'm a big fan, like I said, of, living those scenarios. I think it's really good to dive deep back into your own hunt experience and think about the things that went well. Think about the things that didn't go well. Relive those and spend some time thinking about them. Even grab a notebook and make some notes about them. I think you can learn a lot that can help you in the future if you're just mindful and, you know, evaluating those situations and learning from them. You know, don't dwell necessarily completely on what went wrong, but, you know, identify what went wrong and then, you know, how am I going to fix it if the situation presents itself again in the future? You know, what am I going to do in this situation? So I think that's really, really important. I think it's really good. You know, I've read some studies where visualization is, as you know, as effective or close to it as actually doing the thing. I mean, you could really make headway and ground, but just by doing some self-evaluation and some visualization. So I think that's an exercise I need to do this week. Along with that, there's a pile of others. I know there's a pile of others. I've always talked about, you know, making things good at home, you know, taking care of the yard, the bills, making sure that everything is shored up so that when you get out there, you're stress-free. I think that's a great idea. There's probably some other equipment type of things. These are just the ones that I think I had at the top of my list. So with that, what am I lacking in my own prep? And I'll just give you an honest assessment. And I'm lacking definitely in my sight, developing a sight tape. So that's on the to-do list. Shooting broadheads, definitely on the to-do list. My bow is tuned. I know that. Individually knock tuning arrows. I need to do that this week. I need to shoot each individual arrow with broadheads to make sure those are hitting good. I need to work on some real life situations, you know, throw my pack on. I need to check my third axis. I need to shoot some uphill and downhill just to verify it once again that that's good to go. I talked a little bit about my diet, cleaned it up, and I'm going to maintain that through hunting season. I think that's important. I'm going to go into it feeling better if I do. Working out, I'm going to do that. I'm going to continue to do it. And I've identified it. No, my truck needs an oil change, so I need to get that done. I need to make sure that all my battery packs are charged. You know, there's a lot on this list. In fact, this whole list is really generated from things that I know I need to do. So that's where I'm at right now. I hope you guys are further along than I am. If you're not, now is the time to do it. Just start clipping them off one at a time. Make sure that you have a gear list put together. And I think the sooner you can start working that gear list over, both in making it and then also laying all your gear out and going through it and double checking everything, I think the better off you will be. I've been doing this for long enough that I feel like, you know, relatively quick to my hunt, maybe the day before, 2 days before, I can put together my gear and I can go out and, you know, not lose or forget anything that's major. I can't really think of a hunt where I didn't bring something that was like a major miss, but it's a good thing to have a gear list, and it's a good to go through it and double check it and triple check it and make sure that you've got it dialed and you've got absolutely everything that you're going to need in your pack. I'm going to work on elk calling this week. I know that. So I've got to drive to Vegas tomorrow. So I've got, 4 new Maverick diaphragm calls. I've got a bugle. So I'm going to work on my cow calls and work on my bugles on my way to Vegas to and from tomorrow. So that's on my to-do list. It seems like there's a lot to do. And every year I've always said this, I'm going to be just dialed, you know, well in advance of my hunt, and just doesn't work out that way. Life gets busy. It creeps up on me. So I'm trying to make some headway right now. I think probably most of you need to as well. So good luck with that. That's the episode for the week. I hope you guys found it valuable. If you did, I would love it. I would love it if you guys would leave me a review. You know, if you like the podcast, leave me a review. It's going to help me in the algorithm. It's going to help push it out to more people. So I would very much appreciate that. With that, dive in, get ready for hunting season. I know you guys aren't ready. So get ready. All right. And I'll talk to you next week. All right. Bye.